From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. As a new week begins, we have protests and policing issues still taking priority. COVID numbers, as I'm sure you're seeing, are jumping. A face covering order from the governor has been in place in California since last Thursday. That's for all indoor public places. But there are cities and counties with no plans to enforce it. Your ears may be telling you that the sound is different. I'm hosting from home today because a family member spiked a fever yesterday. We're waiting for a bit more information. And I happen to think it's better to be safe than sorry for all of us. And CAP Radio, of course, agrees. So bear with us. If we have any technical issues, we're going to pause and get reconnected to one of the backups as quickly as possible. So for the latest picture of COVID-19 across the region, we're going to begin with our Monday Mayor's Chat. And Stockton's Mayor Michael Tubbs is on the phone. Mayor Tubbs, welcome to Insight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mayor Tubbs, would you talk about the COVID numbers in Stockton and San Joaquin County right now? And I'd like your perspective. I'd like your opinion about where they are and what's happening with the upward movement.
Yeah, our COVID numbers have been increasing every day, but at a faster rate than they were before we were granted variants and before we started to kind of move forward with reopening things. Our ICU numbers we're looking at very closely. Our hospitalization numbers, we heard that in the neighboring city, Lodi, the hospital is no longer accepting people who aren't COVID patients because I guess there's like an outbreak of COVID-19 among staff. So we know in Stockton and San Joaquin County that although people may be tired, although it may be summer, although we want to get back to how things were before, that's going to be very hard to do so without a vaccine, and that we all have to do our part because this virus is real, and it doesn't care what news stations you watch. It doesn't care who you voted for president. It just cares if you wear a mask and if you're staying at home and wash your hands and socially distancing. So definitely concerned watching the numbers, particularly given the fact that now that we're open, I would like to stay open, but also given the fact that so many of my community have comorbidities with asthma, diabetes, obesity, et cetera. So doing everything we can to be vigilant about ensuring people understand the importance of wearing a mask as a statement of public health rather than politics. And also making sure that folks understand the importance of social distancing.
So let's say something about the phrase you just used, I'd like to stay open, because there's a lot of discussion about now that everything is open, there's not really going to be any rolling back, and we're going forward hoping for herd immunity. Are you in that same camp, that's the direction to go?
I'm not. In terms of my understanding of just exposing everyone to the virus without knowing who and how the virus impacts, and just hoping that social Darwinism is actually very scary, and not what a civilized society does to deal with a global health pandemic, in my opinion. So I think that's why I've been pushing for months now to have a mask ordinance to make sure that as we open up, that folks are protecting themselves and their neighbors. That's why I've been working overtime on figuring out what this contact tracing looks like. So if there is an outbreak, to let people know so that they can quarantine. That's why I've been pushing to make sure we give masks to small businesses, we give hand sanitizers because we understand absence of vaccine. That's why I'm also pushing people stay at home unless it's absolutely essential that you go out. And that's why to support small businesses, we've given grants, et cetera. I understand it's a difficult time for everyone to take sacrifice for everyone, but this idea of just opening everything up, not knowing a lot about this virus, but having a lot of knowledge about how it really impacts the most vulnerable or the least among us or the elderly, those that society should be organized around making sure that they're protected, is troubling to me. And I think as a man of faith, as a Christian, I think, part of my faith tradition teaches me to make sure that we're doing good towards everyone. So this idea of just opening everything up and seeing if people get sick, they get sick, it's fatalistic. It's nihilistic, and I think it's against who we are at our best.
Mayor Tubbs, you were completely outvoted by your city council on the issue of masks, but now Governor Newsom has put into place this mask mandate or requirement for all indoor public places. What is Stockton as a city and then San Joaquin County as a county going to do in terms of enforcement?
I can't speak to San Joaquin County in terms of what they're doing, what they're going to do. I look forward to hearing at their board meeting tomorrow. I know for the city of Stockton, it will be enforced the same way we enforce the stay-at-home order. Again, this is an issue of public health. So cops, especially given the conversation we're having about law enforcement in this country, probably aren't the best first case or first responder to someone not necessarily wearing a mask. So we spend quite often a lot of time with our small businesses and also using our civil process to let businesses know kind of expectations on them to partner with the rest of the community in terms of being good neighbors and ensuring that your employees have masks and PPE, ensuring that social distancing is followed in your business, ensuring that you have clear signage about the need for masks in your place of business so that you have, and that you encourage your customers to do the same. But I think part of the mask ordinance is to signal to the public how serious it is. I heard from so many people over the past 3 months that, well, if it was serious, Mayor Tubbs, you would make us do it. So I think that the idea that now it's a law, more people will be like, okay, this is actually a serious thing, and we won't need cops checking people for masks on or knocking on doors. So that's just not the type of world or city we want to live in.
One more question. In terms of African Americans and populations that are being especially hit hard by COVID, that are more vulnerable for a variety of reasons, what needs to be added to the picture of response or strengthened in the response that isn't happening or isn't there right now?
That's a great question. I think, number one, explaining the causes for this disparity. So I think, again, with this conversation around herd immunity and people are seeing different outcomes based off race, it leads to almost a genetic social Darwinism. And the issue is not that Black people genetically are inherently more likely to get sick. The issue is that Black people live in a society that's been structured in many cases, as we've been discussing, by racism. So because of lack of access to grocery stores, lack of safe environments, because of environmental injustice, African-American communities and other communities of color have high rates of diabetes and other comorbidities or in asthma because they are more likely to live next to freeways, which have a lot of like toxins in the air. Also, I think just really explaining to people that COVID-19 and even these George Floyd protests are an opportunity for us to examine our society and do everything we can to make sure everyone at least has an equal opportunity, because despite what people may want to believe, the data shows us the outcomes of COVID-19, the George Floyd civil unrest has shown us that that's just not the case, and that in 2020, it's really incumbent on us not to bury our heads in the sand and live in a fantasy world, but to deal with the hard truth of the society we are so that we can push it to the society we want to be. So that looks like, I think, things like a guaranteed income. That looks like added support for organizations serving populations that are most likely impacted by COVID-19. We know that the PPP small business loans from Congress, 95% of African-American and minority-owned businesses did not get access to that institutional capital. So it means very targeted intervention since we know where the problem exists.
All right, Mayor Tubbs, thanks so much. Here we are starting a new and very hot week in addition to everything else going on. So take care.
You too, and I hope everything's well with your family.
Thank you so much. That was Stockton's mayor, Michael Tubbs. Ann Schwab is Chico's mayor, and she's on the phone with us now. Mayor Schwab, thanks for joining us on Insight.
Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about COVID-19, will you give me your perspective on the PG&E trial last week?
Well, PG&E rightfully admitted guilt for causing that fire. But it's so disappointing with the settlement amount. Our DA, Mike Ramsey, said, we're treating corporations by people, but we can't put corporations in jail. If this was a person who had caused the fire, they would have been put in jail. And said fined for 85 deaths. However, There have been many people who have passed away as a result of the injuries or the trauma they experienced during the fire. So PG&E, once again, has gotten off very easy in this.
Do you have a scope by numbers of how vastly this has impacted people's lives? If you're going to take that number higher than 85 and in different descriptions, can you give us that picture?
Well, think about all the people that lost their homes, a whole community. How do you get someone's life back? When you're 20 or 30 years old, then maybe you can start rebuilding. But when you're 50 or 60 or 70, just the years that has taken off of people's lives.
So let's then talk about COVID-19 on top of the situation, which is how a lot of the stories about the region have gone. What are the current numbers of COVID-19, and how much of a jump are you seeing in Butte County?
Right now, we're at 94 cases, and I was looking at something yesterday, a letter that I sent to Gavin Newsom asking for, or telling him about the impact in our community and asking for the ability to open up a little earlier than other regions. And it was dated May 26th, and at that time it said, we had only had 18 confirmed cases by May 5th, and now we've jumped up to 94. So that's pretty dramatic.
Of the jump in those cases, what's happening with your most serious, with people needing an ICU bed or the number of people who have lost their lives?
Well, fortunately of this, we have only lost one person. Only one person has died, and three people are currently hospitalized. So we still are able to treat people who are coming down with COVID-19. However, if it continues to grow, our capacity will be limited.
Can I ask you personally what you're most concerned or even fearful about right now, at this point, June 22nd, 2020?
What I'm the most concerned about? A much more dramatic increase in cases, and it's not being able to treat them. And I'm also concerned with our economy and our local businesses that may not survive this. We have.
Well, I know.
You asked.
Well, I was going to say, when there was a fire alert near Oroville last week and some evacuation happened, my mind went to the fact that we're moving into that hot, dry season, and how on edge everybody in Northern California, but especially in the area of a wildfire scar and tragedy, kind of stepped to a new level of anxiety.
Oh, yes. Pretty high anxiety, pretty high trauma, number of children that have been affected with ACEs, or number of ACE scores, are one of the highest in the state, and that was pre-COVID and pre-fire. And now I can just imagine that this trauma has hit every individual. But we try to continue our everyday lives, however modified they are. We're fortunate to have a large municipal park. I was just out there this morning, people walking their dogs, trying to move on, just trying to figure out what this new normal is.
And the ACE score, if people don't know, I think is that adverse childhood experience score, the level that a young person has already endured in their life, correct?
Correct. It's people who may have lost a parent, someone who has experienced sexual trauma, poverty. It's a number of things that affect young people.
We're going to leave it there for today. We wish you well and safety during this hot summer season. Thank you for the conversation on Insight.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
That's Chico's Mayor Ann Schwab. West Sacramento's Mayor Christopher Cabaldon is on the phone. Mayor Cabaldon, welcome back to Insight.
Good morning. Always great to be with you, Beth.
Would you talk about your city's COVID-19 situation? You've been issuing warnings. I know this isn't your style, but are you feeling any bit of, I told you so, I told you this might happen?
No. I have been concerned. I'm working a lot with the public health folks nationally and regionally around what the right metrics are and what the right policies are. And everyone's muddling through and struggling with this. And I don't think anyone in the public health system anticipated sort of the politicization and the weaponization of some of these issues. And so what would normally have been warnings and guidance that would be followed by the vast, vast majority of us, or nearly all of us, just hasn't. And so even sensible or policies with reasonable risks can go very wrong when they fall victim to that sort of politics and fake news kinds of stuff. And so it's been a challenge. In my own city, we just over the last week we've seen more cases than at any point during the entire pandemic, including what we thought of as the peak back in April. And Yolo County over the weekend literally broke our scale. There's a scale that one of the metrics is epidemiological stability, and we're not supposed to have more than 55 cases over a 2-week period. And the scale goes from 0 to 100. We just hit 109. So we're at twice the condition that was required for us to enter into what's called attestation by the state and give us more flexibility. And so it's very concerning. It is also important to emphasize we have not had a surge in deaths and hospitalizations and some of the most severe indicators. So this is one indicator of several. But this is the beauty and the gift of this indicator is that it doesn't involve massive death and disease, and it gives us a chance to take action, both as communities and governments, but especially as individuals and families.
I have learned to ask daily in a conversation like this about the COVID case numbers, because even though we have the Johns Hopkins dashboard, we have the statewide dashboard, we have the county dashboard, case numbers are changing, as you say, so fast, so quickly. What to you is the breakdown in how much of the surge we're seeing being because of testing, increased testing, versus person-to-person transmission?
Yeah, so we can't know for sure, but there's some good reasons to believe that it's not due principally to testing. First is that we've seen a steady increase in testing over the last several months. But what we've seen in the last 2 weeks, really statewide, but certainly in Sacramento and Yolo and in my own city, is a very rapid ramp up. So that we have not increased testing that much in the last 14 days, not by even close. So it cannot be solely because of testing in that regard. It is important though to get smarter about some of the data, because we're so used to the case data. It's the only data that's, along with hospitalizations, that's consistently reported. But what we really want to know is what are the data among asymptomatic tests, because those are giving us a sense of the population. Symptomatic tests, if you're like, doctor, I feel sick, I might have COVID, and you get a test, that's useful, but that's not really telling us a lot about the outbreak in the population. So we need to know the asymptomatic case rates, and we don't typically get those reports. And then along with that, we need to know positive rates, not for folks with symptoms, because many folks with symptoms will have a positive test. But for those that don't have tests, positive rates of under 5% or under 3% are really key. And that data is not consistently reported. It's not available to the public. And that's problematic in our region. Just as an example, both in New Orleans and in my own county of Yolo, when we started doing asymptomatic testing, we found positivity rates of about 4% plus or minus, some places like mine a little higher, some places like Davis a little lower. But among Latinos in both my city and my county and New Orleans, double the rates, which we never would have known just from the regular testing. And it's why it's so critical that we all get regularly tested, at some of these free sites that do it for folks without symptoms.
And just as a benchmark, national health leaders want that positivity rate to be under 10% everywhere. So if what you're saying is true, that it's up around 9% or more among the Latino population in certain areas, and certainly it is under in other vulnerable populations, that's going to set off alarm bells across the country for not only the statewide look at the hot spots, but the national look as well. So what are you urging now? Go ahead.
Well, still the number one thing for residents is to avoid gatherings of any kind. And you know, so we, I think folks know but are not following the guidance with respect to bars and that sort of thing. But quinceañeras and birthday parties and grandma's grandpa and grandpa's anniversary parties, avoid all of those, along with consistent social distancing and masks everywhere. Those are the critical. But also get tested. That whether or not you have symptoms, it's free and easy to do all over the region now. So absolutely get tested, both for yourself, but also to allow us to have the Sentinel system. Look, we're not going to. There is no it's safe or it's not safe anymore. We're going to have a lot of different warning signals. This is more like flying a plane than it is a yes or no. And there's going to be a lot of a dashboard with a gazillion different indicators on it. And we're going to have to pay attention to all of them. No single one is going to drive our decisions, but we must pay attention to them. And we have to take advantage of the fact that some of these give us warning signals far in advance of the worst outcomes in terms of massive deadly outbreaks. So it is important for all of us to really pay attention, to take it seriously, and not just look for a quick report that says, yeah, okay, this I saw this study out of Korea, and maybe it is okay for me to go to my cousin's graduation party. It isn't. So stay safe and get tested, and then support folks in the media and politics that are advocating for paying attention to the science in a way that is smart and mature and is paying attention to the triggers so that we can take the appropriate action. And also recognize government can't save everything, right? We don't issue permits for a birthday party. We can shut down a bar, but we cannot shut down grandma's anniversary party. That's going to be on all of us to do the right things. And those are the things that have caused the worst spread.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we had your voice in this conversation. Take care.
You too, Beth. Thank you.
That's West Sacramento's Mayor Christopher Cabaldon, and Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg wraps up our Monday Mayor's Chat. I think we're talking home to home today, Mayor Steinberg, because I'm broadcasting from my house. I believe you're in yours, correct?
No, I'm actually at the office today, Beth, but with my mask.
Okay. Well, let's start right there. The governor issued a mask order. You've been in favor of masks, but what's the Sacramento Police Department going to do to enforce the wearing of them?
Well, I don't know that there's going to be a strict enforcement regimen here, and that probably isn't appropriate. I think where the police see pretty flagrant violations, they will warn people, as they should. But I don't see a massive enforcement writing of tickets. Look, what you hope and what I've seen as I've been out over the last couple of days is that when it becomes a requirement, more people comply. There are some that don't, but I was on our street on Saturday and Sunday, and I would say, 75-80% of the people had masks. Now, should it be 100? Of course it should be. Should there be warnings to people? Yes, there should be. If people are flagrantly flouting the law, should they be cited? Yes, but this is not about enforcement. It is instead about setting an expectation and a requirement and doing our best to keep people safe.
Give me your expectation on COVID cases in the city, included in that hospitalizations and ICUs. What do you think the numbers are going to do over the next few weeks?
I don't know. I mean, I will say it's any increase, of course, is too high. And I've seen, of course, we've seen the increase in our county and our city, not unlike other parts of the state. But I will tell you that it hasn't been as large as maybe it could be, especially given the protests where people were gathering in the hundreds, many with masks, but many without masks. We could have seen a much larger spike. And so the numbers are still relatively low, but it's always a cause for worry, which is why I think the governor's call for mandatory masks statewide was absolutely appropriate and necessary. But I don't know. I hope that we, you know, if we do see an increase, that it is sort of at the pace that we're seeing now, as opposed to something that, you know, gets higher into the four figures. And certainly the test, the real test, is hospitalizations and ICUs. And we haven't seen that surge materialize, thankfully.
Let me shift the topic here. You said you're working at your office, and in the discussion of proposed police reforms, Black Lives Matter, the Sacramento chapter, and other groups have been pushing at you and city council members and the city manager to open up the meetings in a way where more of their voices and their input can be heard.
Well, we
What's your take on that? What's possible?
Well, I would like to open up the council chambers as quickly as possible, but we also have to follow the public health order. And certainly what we know is that gathering large numbers of people inside any venue is not consistent with the public health. Now, we have had, and it's been pretty successful, we've had dozens of people call in by telephone and give their full public testimony as if they were in chambers. Now, it's not the same as being physically present. I do understand that. But most of my colleagues are out of the chambers. I've been chairing most of the meetings from the chambers. Last week, I think I chaired the meeting from my home. But we will get back to normal order, so to speak, as quickly as we can. But we don't want to crowd people into a council chambers for all the obvious reasons.
So, Mayor Steinberg, what's the timetable then for voting on reforms? And is this going to stretch into a time period where there might be different opportunities for different voices other than just by phone?
Well, I know that, you know, for example, this morning I have a large Zoom meeting with a number of African-American leaders to talk about reform. And you ask, when will there be the first bit of action? A week from Tuesday, June 30th, we're going to vote to establish an inspector general in Sacramento to create full, independent, transparent, publicly disclosed review of any officer-involved shooting, death in custody, or force which results in serious bodily injury to any resident. And we're going to begin setting the direction, including a $5 million appropriation, to establish a new department to have non-law enforcement response to 911 calls that don't involve crime, which I believe is the seed of systemic reform. But we're going to begin next Tuesday with a vote, and we're not wasting any time. And I don't claim, Beth, any of what I'm suggesting is the end or even the middle of the discussion, but my heart and my head are fully into reform, but to that, I just want to proceed in an assertive but a thoughtful way, and I think that's what the people expect.
One last question, different topic. You have involved yourself in some ways in the discussion about the future of McClatchy and the Sacramento Bee. Could you just state very clearly what you want to do there? And there are boundaries for what you can and can't do.
No, I have written now to the bankruptcy judge a couple of times. And my point to the judge is that independent journalism is not just a matter of dollars and cents in business. It is a civic asset and a vital civic asset, just like any other civic asset. And especially in the era that we are living in now, to have independent journalism of all kinds, print, radio, television is vital. And I do not want to see the Bee go into the hands of some hedge fund that decimates the paper. It's already been hurt enough in terms of the cutbacks in staffing over many years. And I think it is part of my role as mayor to make sure that the bankruptcy judge knows that this isn't just an asset to carve up without thinking about the community as a major stakeholder in how this is decided.
Mayor Steinberg, thank you again for a Mayor's Chat on Insight. Glad to have you with us.
Glad to talk to you, Beth. Thank you. All the best.
And you take care. That's Sacramento's Mayor Daryl Steinberg. Up next, another change of topics. We're going to get to unemployment benefits. Law expert Jennifer Shaw is back with us today. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.